Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Today's podcast is with Dr. Kelly Turner, who is author of a great book called Radical Remission, The 9 Key Factors That Can Make a Real Difference. And we introduced the 9 key factors in part 1 of our podcast. Please check it out. This is part 2 of our podcast. Now we'd like to drill down and identify a little more about the 9 key factors and talk a little bit about some real case studies of people who have beat cancer in seemingly remarkable ways which were not foreseen and which cannot be entirely attributable to conventional therapy. And before we get back to our discussion with Dr. Turner, let me read a review of the book Radical Remission from Larry Dossey, MD, who's been a guest here on Intelligent Medicine. He's a very, very well-respected spokesperson for the, shall we say, the spirit in medicine. And he's written a book entitled The Power of Prayer. His review says, remission from cancer is a clinical fact. Radical remission shows us how we can shift the odds of remission in our favor. What I like most about this book is balance, says Dr. Dossey. Turner does not ask anyone to abandon conventional therapy, but instructs us on how to add healing factors to the mix that are often overlooked. And that's what the book is all about. It's got examples, case studies, and details about what works. And it seems like the way you approach this is in a scientific way. You went in not as so much of an advocate, but sort of like an anthropologist. You know, you did your field work and you said, you know, what is it that this strange tribe is doing? You know, like you put on your pith helmet and you got your notebook out and you tried to take notes on what commonalities link these cases together.
That's exactly right, Dr. Hoffman. The type of research that was most appropriate for this topic was anthropological methods. So exactly, I put on my anthropology hat. And that's what you need to do when you're studying something that science cannot currently explain. Not only can we not explain it, but doctors don't even have hypotheses for why these people got better. They literally scratch their heads and they say, I don't know how you did that. And so in science, when we're dealing with something where we don't even have a hypothesis to test, we do have to go back to anthropology. And it's like we're looking at, you know, some tribe we just discovered in the middle of the Amazon that has never been seen before, right? We need to start, you know, with a very blank slate, and we need to say, you, tribesmen, you tell me, what is your world like? How did you get well? And, you know, it's amazing what comes out when you go and you ask people, tell me everything you did to get well, and don't worry, nothing that you tell me will I won't think it's crazy, right? So you can't scare me, basically. And as soon as
you're non-judgmental, basically.
Exactly, non-judgmental. And as soon as I told them, you know, you could tell me absolutely everything. I've heard everything, so nothing will shock me. That's when they started opening up, especially about the emotional shifts, which I think is important because I think when people are talking to their doctors, they don't always talk about the emotional things because they think that it's not what you should talk to doctors about. So I was glad to be able to bridge that gap there, you know, as an anthropological researcher and as a former counselor.
Well, let's talk about, you know, I think a lot of people are concerned about the emotional side, but, you know, frankly, people are looking for formulas. They're looking for protocols. And so, you know, I'm sure your book isn't structured this way, like, what are the 6 power herbs to beat cancer? You know, probably that's not the way it works. But what are some of the things that the themes that just kept coming up when people talked about supplementation? Any trends?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I wish there were 6 herbs that everyone was taking. That would make everything a lot easier for all of us. I was hoping to find just 1 or 2 herbs. But people ended up taking herbs that were native to their countries because I studied people from all over the world. And so, you know, in Hawaii, they're eating the nani fruit. And, you know, in Japan, they're eating mushrooms. And in the Caribbean, they're having the soursop fruit. So you're taking whatever grows naturally in your climate. But there were 3 categories of herbs and herbs and supplements. And the first one was herbs and supplements that help you digest your food. So you can be eating, you know, all these greens, these vegetables and stuff, but if you have poor gut health, if your intestines are covered in mucus, for example, it's just going to go right through you and you're not going to absorb it. So things like digestive enzymes, prebiotics, and probiotics were definitely a common trend. The second group of herbs and supplements were herbs and supplements that help you detoxify your body. So whether or not the things that we're trying to get out of our body cause cancer, or whether they just hamper your immune system, and therefore getting rid of them allows your immune system to go handle cancer, that's not clear. But what is clear is that the people that I study tried to get rid of things like viruses, toxins, bacteria, heavy metals, and parasites and yeast. So they were taking things to detoxify and clear those things out of their body. And some people really focused on, you know, whatever was problematic for them. So one woman knew that she had a lot of heavy metals in her body. Another person knew from testing that he had a lot of fungus and yeast in his body. So what you exactly need to detoxify is going to have to be determined by, you know, your own research and a health professional. Mm-hmm. But last but not least, the third category were herbs and supplements that help boost your immune system. And that's, you know, adding things in, whether you're low on vitamin D or whether, you know, you're adding vitamin C or aloe vera or mushrooms, things that are going to literally strengthen your immune system. Mm-hmm. And I'll give you a good case example, because sure. I learn best by stories. But the woman that I feature in this chapter, her name is Jenny. She was diagnosed with an interesting form of lymphoma called splenetic marginal zone, which means it affects your spleen.
Hmm. So she had an unusual type of cancer. Yeah.
It is. Lymphoma. And that's, and she got, you know, four different opinions from four different doctors. One of them wanted to put her on five different chemos immediately. And another one said, you know, why don't you try changing your diet and taking supplements and see if your own immune system can do this.
So it suggests there wasn't like a real slam dunk way of treating it. There wasn't even medical consensus about the way to approach it.
Exactly, exactly. And she went to top-notch hospitals, on the West Coast, and they were all telling her different things. And so her instinct told her not to jump into the five chemotherapies right away, but to try radically changing her diet and taking herbs and supplements. And that's because she had been eating frozen food for about a decade.
Hmm.
She'd been on a weight loss plan. Yeah. I won't mention the company, but she was, you know,
Delivered food. Packaged, right.
Yes, that was packaged and frozen. And so she just instinctively thought, you know, maybe I should try eating fresh, alive food. And so she radically changed her diet along the lines that the people that I studied do, which is really greatly increasing fruits and vegetables, and then mm-hmm. reducing things like meat, wheat, sweets, and dairy. So she did that, and she, first of all, lost some weight that she'd wanted to lose for a long time. And she felt better, but she didn't feel completely better, and she could feel her spleen had shrunk a little bit, but it was still very enlarged. And so she started working with some nutritionists and naturopaths and even an integrative oncologist about what she could take to boost her immune system. And that's when she started taking things she took like 40 pills a day. So she was taking prebiotics, probiotics, digestive enzymes, quercetin, resveratrol, the list just goes on and on. And those were particularly prescribed for her. So I don't want any of your listeners to run out and get those. Mm-hmm. They were particularly prescribed for what her body was lacking.
Right. As an aside, you know, I frequently, you know, I do a radio program, and it's a call-in show, and you usually have about 3 to 5 minutes to answer your question. And people call in, you know, with very complicated cancer predicaments.
Yeah.
And I have to say to them, I can't really answer in a pat way, you know, what's the cancer protocol for your, you know, advanced metastatic melanoma, for example. You know,
right.
what vitamin do you take, or what's the vitamin combo? You know, and there is no such thing, and I think it really has to be individualized, targeted.
It really does. But she took these three categories, and the point is that she took like 40 pills a day, meaning that for her, she needed a major intervention in terms of her supplements. So she was doing the big diet change, she was juicing, and she was doing these supplements, and then she was making these emotional shifts as well and working on a lot of her mental health things as well. But she could feel her spleen shrinking, you know, literally with the touch of her hand. Within 2 months, it had shrunk back to normal size. And so that was the proof that she needed that this was working. And she always knew that she could, you know, call the one doctor who'd recommended, you know, those five chemotherapies, and she could start it. But she wanted to see if her own immune system could could deal with it first. And in her case, it did, and it worked. And she's cancer-free. It's been more than 7 years now.
Wow, that's very, very exciting.
Yeah.
So there is no single diet, but there are commonalities to the diets. You know, they're plant-based. They include a large number of phytonutrients from fresh fruits and vegetables.
Right.
Some may include juicing protocols. Some may eschew meat entirely. Others may include animal products, but probably grass-fed or organic products as needed. I think that's a common feature of many diets that are used to beat cancer.
Organic was definitely one of the threads. In terms of the diet, it was greatly increasing fruits and vegetables, greatly reducing meat, wheat, sweets, and dairy. And then the third change was making sure that everything was organic. And the fourth change was drinking a lot of filtered water. And those last two often kind of get tacked on and glossed over, but I think they're really important because, you know, we know scientifically that there are toxins in this world that cause cancer, right? We inject them into rats every day in order to grow tumors. And so to eat organically means to take away the chemicals, at least a large amount of chemicals that are found in our food supply these days. And same thing with the filtered water. When you're drinking filtered water, you're reducing your chemical burden. So very important, I think, to remember those last two things as well.
So the other chapters of the book focus on mental, emotional, and spiritual factors. Can you give us an example of how that could make a difference in a cancer outcome with an actual case?
Sure. Well, let me bring up this idea of spirituality, because I think so many people, when they think of, you know, spiritual healing and miracle cures, they think that, you know, you pray overnight and, you know, God or somebody comes down and just heals you, and it's kind of given to you. It's this gift that's given to you. Mm-hmm. And certainly we have cases of very quick healings happening that way. But what I heard over and over again from the people that I studied, these radical remission survivors, was that it was about a daily practice. It wasn't about this night of intense prayer as much as it was a daily practice that they did every single day. And some of them just did it for 10 minutes a day. Other people, it was longer. But they had some sort of spiritual connecting practice that allowed them to clear their mind, take deep breaths, feel at peace, feel connected to something peaceful. And for them, you know, it could be any religion. You know, I interviewed Catholics, I interviewed Jewish people, I interviewed, you know, Islamic people. It didn't matter who they were praying to or what energy they were connecting to. You know, I interviewed a lot of people who were meditating, and they were just connecting to, you know, this inner chi, this inner prana, right? So this idea of...
And it wasn't so much about physical attendance at a... an institution, a religion, you know, synagogue, church, or mosque, although that can facilitate spiritual connection for many people. But for others, it was a very personal thing.
Yeah, yeah. For most of the people that I interviewed, it was something they did at home or walking in nature every day.
Mm-hmm.
But what I like about this finding is that there's scientific evidence behind it, in the sense that we know now, as researchers, that when you take, for example, meditators and hook them up to an fMRI machine, when they get to deep levels of meditation, not only does their brain change, but their immune system changes. And so by doing this connecting practice, which involves deep breathing and letting go of worry and letting go of thought, actually, altogether, and just breathing deeply in the present moment, it changes your physiology. So the glands in your brain release this flood of hormones, which have been shown in clinical studies to do things like increase your natural killer cells, right? So what starts off as something kind of spiritual and religion actually boils down to something very physical if you actually sit or walk and do it. And it's something that you need to practice every day. And just like that, you know, the laughter practice or the happiness practice, the people that I study said that at first it was really hard to sit and try to find thoughtlessness or calm, you know, amidst all their fear and everything. But the more they practiced it, the easier it got.
You chose cancer as your subject because it's, I mean, certainly it's a dramatic illustration of how remissions can occur spontaneously. But isn't this information generalizable to the treatment of virtually all illnesses?
I believe it is, because all of these things are directly or indirectly helping the immune system, and the immune system is how your body fights any disease. So these are things alongside any treatment for any disease in a way that certainly can't hurt and might help a lot. So there's certainly things that I've, you know, after studying this for 10 years, I certainly do these 9 things as much as I possibly can, and you know, I encourage people to, you know, read the studies and do what feels right to them. But certainly these are things that that can be applied to almost any situation.
So today's Intelligent Medicine call to action vis-a-vis radical remission. By the way, you weren't content to just write a book, which has actually, you know, been a very, very hot-selling book, and you've made the talk show circuit. I think you've also been on the Dr. Oz show and many other shows to talk about this. You have founded the Radical Remission Project. Tell us about that.
That is hopefully the continuation of this research. Like I mentioned earlier in our talk today, the hardest part about studying these cases is that they aren't tracked anywhere. Unfortunately, they are not tracked in the National Cancer Registry. And so it was slightly hard for me to find these cases, although it was actually a lot easier than I thought it would be. But to allow researchers like myself to keep learning from these cases, I've created the Radical Remission Project, which is an online sort of destination for sharing and learning from radical remission cases. So if you've had a radical remission, you can go there and you can submit your case in 10 minutes, which is a lot better than what it currently is, where right now a doctor has to write up a report that takes about 40 hours to write up. So
right, and then submit it to a medical journal where it may or may not be accepted, yada, yada.
Exactly, exactly. So this, in 10 minutes, you can share your story. And then it's also instantly searchable by anyone. So cancer patients or even just, you know, interested members of the general public can come and search through these cases. And, you know, for example, they could pull up all the cases that have been submitted for breast cancer or something like that. So it's a way for researchers to keep learning and for the general public to keep being inspired.
Well, that's a fabulous project. And so what's your advice to someone who's just been diagnosed with cancer? Would you recommend that they get involved with the community?
Well, get involved with the radical remission community or,
yeah,
or any? Certainly, because I think that what we're here to do is study people who heal. And so if you're diagnosed with cancer and you want to just, you know, immerse yourself in cases of people who've healed, then certainly come over to radicalremission.com. But I think my biggest, you know, takeaway from my research, and I share this with people who've been diagnosed, is that healing is possible at any time. I study people who were sent home in a wheelchair, hooked up to liquid nutrition, and they are here 20 years later. So just the idea that, you know, healing can happen at any time, and you never know what change is going to tip the needle for you.
Well, you know, I also want to emphasize that it's not just about, you know, I will make a pact with God. I will pray fervently, you know, for 6 hours a day. I will change my diet. I will, you know, stand on my head in a yogi position. It's not just about making a pact because your life is threatened. It's also about the quality of your life. And this, I think, is a very good way to invest your time if you are someone who may have, in fact, a limited prognosis, because the quality of your life will change in a really positive way, certainly around, you know, some of the emotional changes and some of the attitudinal changes, the spiritual connections that you'll forge, because, or, you know, people, they kind of live their lives and rush through their day, and sometimes a cancer diagnosis is a big wake-up call.
Right. It certainly makes you stop and think about what you want to change. And that was the big theme of the people I studied, is they kept making changes. You know, some of them, you know, did 6 of these things, and their cancer was still there. And it wasn't until the 7th or the 8th or the 9th that things finally started turning around. And so, you know, these 9 things might need to be done cumulatively, or, you know, certain people might need certain ones and other people might need others. But the idea is just to keep changing until you come across the change your body was asking you to make.
Well, absolutely. So if you or a loved one are challenged with a cancer diagnosis, radical remission, find out about the 9 key factors that can make a real difference. And our guest today, Dr. Kelly Turner, her website is www.radicalremission.com. You can find out about the Radical Remission Project, and there's community and blogs and sharing. And it is a very, very inspiring enterprise. So I congratulate you for your commitment to this very, very important area of research.
Oh, thanks, Dr. Hoffman. Well, I'm trying.
Well, we want to get the word out. Thanks for joining us, Dr. Kelly Turner. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.